We have a guest who is kind enough to join us by phone on our program. She has the most interesting background to share with us. And interestingly enough, this discussion is being held today because this is Cancer Survivors Day today. Joining us on our program is Heidi Bright. Heidi is somebody whose story I think will inspire folks listening to us. Heidi, first of all, let me stop talking about you in the third person. Welcome to our program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you join us.
Thank you, Bob.
Let's begin with your background. We'll get into talking about your book, your work as well. It was in 2009 that you were diagnosed with cancer. Can you take us back to that time?
Well, I was sitting in an oncologist's office, and I got the paralyzing message that there was no cure for this uterine cancer. I was terrified and in shock. I didn't even know what to ask. It was already terminal, and I had the most aggressive type of cells. And I was a mother. I had children at home. What was going to happen to them? At that point, I needed to do everything I could to survive, everything the doctor suggested, and much, much more. And that's how I began my journey through 2 years of chemotherapy treatments and 3 major surgeries. But Bob, the cancer wouldn't stop coming back. It was just relentless. And after my 3rd surgery, I went to see the nurse practitioner with my post-op appointment, and she said, you need to get back on chemotherapy. Well, I had a very rare type of cancer, and there was no more chemotherapy. So I told her that, and she said, well, I've been around here for decades. I see this all the time.
Oops. I think we lost Heidi there. Heidi Bright is talking with us on our program on the
thing.
Heidi?
Yes?
Yeah, I think your phone cut out a little bit there. You were talking about going to the nurse practitioner. Tell us what happened there.
She said, I've been doing this for decades. I see this all the time. If you can't get back on chemotherapy because there isn't anymore, then you need to get your affairs in order.
Mm.
So she pretty much sent me home to die.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't the first one to feel like there was no hope. But my next scan was clean. And I believe that happened because those 2 years of treatment gave me the time I needed to heal my life. I worked on this situation from every angle. I worked on it from the medical, from the nutritional, the physical, the emotional, the social, the mental, and the spiritual. I worked hard on each level, and I believe that that's what got me into radical remission. I have had no evidence of disease and no medical treatment since 2011.
Okay. Now, as you say that, one of the thoughts that I've had since we started our discussion, you started talking about your experience in being diagnosed in 2009. How much did you know about this form of cancer at that time?
Nothing. The first oncologist I went to had never heard of it before. He looked through all his online information. He found one paragraph of information about this type of cancer. So there's a type of cancer called a sarcoma.
Mm-hmm.
It's a connective tissue cancer. And only 1 in 100 cancer diagnoses is for a sarcoma. I had a uterine sarcoma. There are 5 types of uterine sarcoma. 3 of them are the common ones, and there are 2 that are even more rare. I had one of those more rare ones. There was only one other person I have ever heard of who's had the same diagnosis. I only heard of her when I started this journey, and I didn't take any effort to find out who she was. I just wanted to get my life back.
I have to ask this question because I think it all the time. I often ask it. In a way, I feel silly asking this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, because some of the people listening to us are probably thinking, well, wait a minute, why didn't Salter ask the question already? When you got the diagnosis in 2009, what went through your mind?
Well, there was the fear about my children. That was a big fear. And there was also the thought, I have taken such good care of myself. Why is this happening? I maintained my weight. I ate a good diet, a lot of organic produce. I exercised. I was meditating an hour every day. Why do I have end-stage aggressive cancer? It made no sense to me. It was shocking. I had done everything right. What do you do with something like that?
Mm-hmm. So in deciding to take the kind of approach that you did, how involved did this get? Because it sounds like you approached this from a multifaceted angle or angles with this. You know, you talked with us about the medical side of this. Nutritionally, what were you doing?
I moved to as far as I could, completely organic, plant-based, whole foods diet. I got rid of any processed foods. I reduced my sugar intake to just about none for the nutritional side. I also tried to get a house filter for my water so that I would have better drinking water. I can go into a lot of detail about the nutrition, but that's kind of the overall.
Yeah, actually, I think that's actually an important point for you to go into more detail about that, if you don't mind, because some of the people who are listening to us are going to be very interested in, as I am, in exactly how it is that you broke this down in this approach nutritionally.
I did as much research into what foods would provide the most vitality to my body as I could, and I cite a lot of these in my book, Thriver Soup. I focused on anything that would maximize my chances of survival. Turmeric is the number one anti-cancer spice. It attacks cancer in 10 different ways. And I talk in my book about how to prepare it so that you get the maximum amount of nutrition out of the turmeric. I added black pepper to the dish with the turmeric in it, which increases the bioavailability of the turmeric. And then I drank green tea with that meal. So that's one area. I learned from my Ayurvedic medical doctor at Ohio State University that the best food to eat for breakfast is a cooked apple. And I give a lot of reasons for that in my book. A lot of it is the fiber. It wakes up the digestive system. It gets things moving. That's the best thing to have for breakfast. And then I added nuts and fresh produce, fresh fruit to it, like berries. Berries are a great thing to add because of all the nutrients in them.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a green smoothie every day. I have a Vitamix, which is a high-speed blender, and I add either romaine lettuce or blanched brassica vegetables like kale, chard, anything in that family. They need to be blanched before they get put in the Vitamix because they can block thyroid function if they're eaten raw. So I blanch them, put them in the Vitamix with a lot of times green tea and maybe a few other things that I think would be good. And then I have that every day. And I know that my nutritional program worked for me. I have a whole section about that in Thriver Soup. Because there's something called albumin in the blood, which is an indicator of one's nutritional status. Anybody can get that with a blood draw. People who have an albumin level of 2.5 or below usually have a poor cancer prognosis. Those with an albumin level of 3.5 and above usually have a good prognosis. When I was diagnosed, my albumin level was already up to 4.2. My oncologist at MD Anderson that I went to see, she she was shocked that it was high and I had end-stage cancer. I knew from that diet was not going to save my life, but it sure was going to give me a leg up, and that I needed every leg up I could get.
Listen to CBS Sports Radio every weekend for nonstop sports updates and breaking news, including analysis of the hottest topics in sports.
CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio.
Listen live every weekend on air or online at CBSSportsRadio.com.
Know what's going on with your favorite artists, bands, and celebs. Sign up today to get the Radio.com daily newsletter, which covers all your breaking music and entertainment news. Go to Radio.com/newsletter to get updates directly to your inbox. That's Radio.com/newsletter.
We are in a discussion with Heidi Bright on our program. Heidi is joining us. She's the author of an interesting book entitled Thriver Soup, A Feast for Living Consciously During the Cancer Journey. And she is sharing with us her experience with the journey itself. She was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of cancer, end-stage form of uterine sarcoma in 2009. And we've really just begun in our discussion with her and talking with her a little bit about her approaches with this. The book itself, doing this book, why was it important for you to do?
When I ended up in radical remission, several of my friends said, you've got to write a book to share what you learned to help other people. And I agreed with them. This needed to be done because there are so many things that can help people on the cancer journey if they know about them, and it's all compiled now in this book. There's more than 250 practical tips for getting through cancer and for staying healthy beyond cancer. It's endorsed by a surgeon and breast cancer patient advocate, Dr. Christine Horner, and people all over are finding it helpful. I get comments from people about things that they learned reading Thriver Soup that have been game-changing for them. So it's doing what I wanted to do. It's helping people have strength and hope and options. People need options when they're faced with cancer, and Thriver Soup offers lots of options.
When you talk about the idea of a cancer diagnosis, a lot of people will think, wait a minute, that's like the ultimate form of bad news. How do you say to somebody that you can see hope at that time?
Because there are so many things that can be done. There are so many things that doctors can do. That's getting better and better all the time. There's new research with immunotherapy that looks very promising. But until that is available to everybody who has cancer, there are a lot of things that can be done to help people along the way. There are things that can be done, dozens of things that can be done to reduce the side effects of chemotherapy. There's options to help with surgery to get out of the hospital and off the pain pills more quickly. And there are many things that can be done to manage the emotional and the spiritual and the mental side effects that come along with this kind of a diagnosis. And there is hope because there are a lot of people in radical remission. I looked at lots of lists of characteristics of people in radical remission, and they simmered it down into three basic things. It involves changing attitudes, changing behaviors, and making major life choices. If those three are operating in somebody's life, they have a much higher chance, I believe, of coming out on the other side of cancer treatment.
When you talk about the idea that there are ways to cope with chemotherapy, you know, you yourself, you had 42 chemotherapy treatments over a two-year period of time. Most of us would, you know, hear that or think that and think, oh my goodness, that's overwhelming even to think about. How do you suggest somebody who's going through chemotherapy, how they can cope with that?
Well, one attitude that somebody can have is something that a friend of mine shared with me, and I share it in Thriver Soup. And that is, if anybody remembers the Lone Ranger show, the old black and white, the Lone Ranger had a friend he called Chemo Sabi, which meant trusted friend. So if chemotherapy can be reframed as chemosabi, something that's on your side to help you get rid of the cancer in your body, that can be helpful. Once you've had the chemotherapy, there are lots of things that can be done to reduce the side effects. One common characteristic is for blood cell counts to drop, sometimes precipitously. And typically, a cancer patient will have a shot between every cycle of chemotherapy to get their blood cell counts back up. I went through 42 treatments. I had one shot one time to get my blood cell counts up. And I talk in Thriver Soup about the things I did to keep my white cell counts up. I used acupressure on myself. I had a visualization that I used every day. And I talk about the foods that can help the body produce more white blood cells. When my mother went through chemo treatment in the 1980s, she could not stand to put anything in her mouth besides lemon drops. Well, I didn't want to go on a lemon drop diet. So I tried to find a way to figure out what to do to keep my taste buds normal. And I found something called the oil pull. And it involves swishing raw sunflower seed oil in the mouth every morning before anything else is put in the mouth. And I explained the entire process in Thriver Soup. And I went through my entire 2 years, and I only had 1 month when I just gave myself a break from doing that every day. That was the month that my taste buds went bad. But the rest of the time, I could eat normally and taste normally. Another thing that commonly happens to cancer patients is they get neuropathy, which is a tingling and often painful condition of the nerve endings in the hands and the feet. Some people have a hard time walking. I got to the point where I could hardly hold a pencil, and it was painful every morning when I woke up. But I discovered something called R-lipoic acid, which is an antioxidant, so you have to talk to the doctor before you take it, because we aren't supposed to take antioxidants during chemotherapy. But once chemotherapy is done and you're out in the clear, it's free game. So I used R-lipoic acid, 100 milligrams a day, and that was a huge help in reducing the neuropathy. It also helps prevent hearing loss. There's a type of chemotherapy that causes hearing loss, and I use that. I talked to my doctor, and I said, when can I take antioxidants? And they said, between the die-off phase and the next infusion, you can have some. So I was careful what I picked out, and R-lipoic acid was one of them because the neuropathy was getting to be a problem. There are so many things that can be done to reduce the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
It is very scary when you see the nurse coming towards you all gowned up with a mask over her mouth and gloves on her hands and just to touch the bag that holds the chemotherapy, and then she's going to inject that in your veins. It's very scary, but it doesn't have to be terrifying. It can be managed.
And what about when somebody's actually facing surgery?
Surgery can be frightening also because you don't know if you're going to wake up on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
With all the news about immunotherapy, there is but morphine actually depresses the immune system, but there is something that the anesthesiologist can use called tramadol to help with pain management, and that does not depress the immune system. So I opted for that when I could. I had the Ayurvedic doctor, who's also an MD at OSU, also recommend Arnica homeopathy, which is, they're just little pellets, and I explain in there how to use it before, during, and after, not exactly during, but the day of surgery and then after surgery. He said there was a study that showed that this type of homeopathy could actually improve recovery time. Brad, up in Oregon, he had to face some surgery for his lung tumor, and he was afraid of having surgery because he didn't have support around him to help him out. Well, he looked at my top five tips in Thriver Soup and decided to do all of them, and the most important tip for him was a CD surgical support series that you can listen to before, during, and after surgery, and it gives the body messages like raising up vital energy in the body. And he got out of the hospital a day early using these methods. I used these methods and got out of the hospital a day early. And there's other items on the list that can help people manage surgery, so it's not quite so devastating and debilitating. It can be managed.
We're talking with Heidi Bright on our program On the Fan this morning. She is the author of Thriver Soup, A Feast for Living Consciously During the Cancer Journey, and she's sharing her story with us. What would you say in terms of how it is that somebody should handle their fears? Because some people just have fear about the fact that they have cancer.
Many people end up with post-traumatic stress disorder from a cancer diagnosis. It is terrifying because you don't know if you're going to live or die. A lot of times you don't even know what direction to move to. When I was diagnosed, I went to see a psychotherapist, and she introduced me to a process called the map of emotions. And what it involves is experiencing the sensations of fear in the body without thinking, analyzing, making stories about, or anything like that. Just simply focusing on the sensation of fear in the body. Let it move around if it wants to. Let it get intense if it wants to. And after about 90 seconds, it will dissipate. Now, if you start thinking about what's making you afraid again, then you can go back into that process. And I have done that process for an hour at a time. But in the end, I feel much better. It keeps the fear from being overwhelming, and I don't have to suppress the fear. I can accept it for what it is, allow it to be there, and allow it to dissipate. Grace is someone who found this process very helpful. She doesn't even have cancer. She has Parkinson's disease, and she read Thriver Soup, and she said six words on this entry, on this page, leapt out at her and changed her life. And those words were, feel the sensations in your body. And she changed her behavior toward her fear. She found that this gave her more energy to address other areas of her life. She had more energy to exercise. She had more energy to focus on what she was eating. And she's doing much better now because she was able to divert her energy.
Hmm. Are people surprised by the kinds of things that you're talking about and taking these approaches, which, you know, they wouldn't fall in the traditional category?
I don't know if people are surprised as much as they are. I guess what they're finding is that there's options for them too, that they don't have to be so afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That there are things they can do. They don't have to just do what the doctor says and hope for the best. They can actually take it into their own hands. You know, I think of Muhammad Ali. He didn't just do what his coach said. He did much more. And that's what made him a winner. That's what made him a victor. He wasn't a victim of anything. And cancer patients don't have to be victims of cancer. They can be a victor over the cancer whether or not they survive, because they can change their attitudes and their behaviors and their choices. And this can change their entire experience of the dis-ease. And I do find that people who read this book are experiencing that shift.
There's something for every sports fan on CBSLocalSports.com. Watch live radio shows and original video programming while reading national articles from some of the best writers in the country. Visit CBSLocalSports.com today.
Love listening to your favorite stations online? Download the Radio.com app to get on-the-go access to hundreds of HD radio stations, award-winning podcasts, and top entertainment and music articles. Go to apps.radio.com for more information or download today from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
We're in discussion with Heidi Bright on our program. Heidi is the author of Thriver Soup, A Feast for Living Consciously During the Cancer Journey. She was diagnosed in 2009 with rare end-stage uterine sarcoma. She has had an amazing journey with this process. The book, Thriver Soup, A Feast for Living Consciously During the Cancer Journey, you were talking about before we paused for our sports update and messages. And part of what you were talking about was some of the feedback that you've gotten from people who've read the book. What do they say?
Well, I have one from a friend of Patty's. She sent a note. The woman sent a note to Patty on Facebook. She said, "We have our first appointment with the oncologist on Monday. The course of treatment we are expected to have presented to us features aggressive radiation. As I opened Thriver Soup, I flipped over a few pages and stopped on page 79. Right there, outlined with specific questions for particular physicians, was the key to a much more successful, informative consult with the radiation oncologist." And she said the book is continuing to help them in miraculous ways. That's just one example. I get a lot of these. People are being really helped by it. They're changing their lives, and it's helping.
What does that do for you? What does that do to you when you read something like that?
It's so gratifying because I feel like I have a purpose, and that is to share my message of genuine hope with people, and to see that come to fruition, it's just very gratifying.
And what is your hope as you look to the future? I mean, you know, you're telling your story. Here it is. It's Cancer Survivors Day, as I mentioned at the very beginning of our discussion. Two thoughts. First of all, let's talk a little bit about Cancer Survivors Day. And then what lies ahead for you? What are you looking to accomplish?
Cancer Survivors Day is a day to celebrate surviving cancer. And that is a great thing to celebrate once you've been diagnosed with cancer, because for many people, it does not end well. And for a lot of people, even if they think they're done, a lot of times the cancer will come back. And then it's stage four, and it's much more difficult to get rid of. So to celebrate life is very enjoyable for a cancer patient. Many wake up every day and say, "I open my eyes. I am so glad I am still here." So I celebrate with them being here, and I celebrate 5 years of radical remission. I'm very grateful for that. And the second question was, I'm sorry.
Your future. What are you looking to do? What are you hoping to do?
I'm a writer by profession. Mm-hmm. This is my third traditionally published book. I have a children's book that I will start looking for a publisher soon. It's already been edited. It's ready to go. I just need to figure out which publisher to send it to. It's about a child who's grieving her grandmother, and she has a dream about her grandmother, and that gives her a sense of connection. My son passed away a year ago from a heroin overdose. He was on heroin for 2 years. So I went to write a book for grieving parents who are dealing with heroin overdoses, and I have a website, parentofanaddict.com. And I have not worked on that real hard yet because I'm trying to get Thriver Soup out. That's my first priority. And then I have a couple of fiction books that I've been working on, but they're going to be a while because these books will take up a lot of time.
And I'm sorry to hear about your son and the fact that he had passed away.
It's been terrible.
I can only imagine what that must have been like.
But
I was thinking about this with your journey, your family, your support system during this journey, what has that been like? And how important is that?
That is very important. Studies show that those who feel highly supported live longer than those who don't. I would encourage anyone diagnosed with any chronic disease to get into a support group, because you'll find tips that way. You'll find ways of coping. You'll feel like you're not alone. You'll feel supported. That is very important emotionally for any disease journey. I would very much encourage that. That's among my top 10 tips for people who are diagnosed with cancer. And the top 10 tips I offer to anybody who comes to my website, thriversoup.com. They can sign up for my weekly blog posts, and I will send them that top 10 list.
Okay, that's Thriver, T-H-R-I-V-E-R, Soup, Thriver Soup, all is one word, .com. We're talking with Heidi Bright, who is the author of Thriver Soup, A Feast for Living Consciously During the Cancer Journey. She's talking with us on our program on The Fan. This idea of handling stress, being a cancer patient, what's that like in the real world?
Well, it is a PTSD type of symptom for many cancer patients. What's it like on a day-to-day basis? Well, it's not sleeping. It's shaking sometimes. It's worrying all the time. But there are ways of managing it. And I do have a section on the spiritual side of cancer. And I talk about how to do visualizations. I offer suggestions for affirmations. I talk about how to pray. There's directed prayer, there's non-directed prayer, and I offer various kinds of meditation techniques. The meditation technique that worked the best for me was to sit or lie down with my spine straight, have my palms up, and to ask that my fears and doubts and worries be lifted away and that I be filled with faith and trust and filled with healing energy. And then I would sit like that 10 minutes every morning and 10 minutes every evening. And my body liked that.
Mm-hmm.
I felt better when I got done. And it really helped me with managing stress.
When you talk about it helping you in managing stress, I think I know the answer to this, but how?
More body awareness. And allowing it to be what it was without trying to manipulate it and without trying to think about it. Just allowing the sensations to be there. A lot of times I'd feel like I had butterflies in my stomach. Okay, I have butterflies in my stomach. That's not hurting me. It's okay. I can focus on those butterflies until they fly away. It's a simple process. It just takes practice.
Sometimes when people are diagnosed with cancer, patients are told to be positive. Developing a good attitude, even with the diagnosis, is that a difficult thing to do?
For me, it took some time. I went to see a psychotherapist, and she had to teach me how to manage my emotions. And if I had not learned to manage my anger and powerlessness and worry and doubt and fear and all those other emotions that come with a cancer diagnosis, I probably would have stayed a mess. But she taught me how to deal with them with the map of emotions process. And one thing that happens with a lot of cancer patients is they're angry. Along with the fear, there's the anger. And anger, when we think about things that we're angry about, we get resentful, and we get blaming, and we become hostile. Those are moods, but getting rid of those moods and allowing the anger to simply be what it is without acting on it or thinking about it can change the entire experience and help us develop a better attitude.
Well, that idea of getting angry, it would seem that for some people that would almost be natural, because one of the thoughts I've had throughout our discussion is something we've brought up before in discussions on this program with people who've had diagnosis of basically of terminal conditions. And that's this whole idea of some people react initially with the diagnosis of saying, well, why me? Did you?
Of course. Why me when I'm so healthy?
Mm-hmm.
But then the question can be turned around. Why not me? What is so special about me that I should not end up with a terrible diagnosis? Nothing. I'm a human being and just like everybody else. Statistically, people get sick. And we need to stop the blaming. The blaming is not helping anybody. And the anger is a natural, normal response. There is nothing wrong with being angry. It's what we do with the anger that makes a difference. And that's where the map of emotions was so helpful for me, because I learned how to get rid of my resentments and get rid of my blaming by just feeling the anger in my body as it was and allowing it to dissipate when it was ready.
Now I've got to also ask you about something that I think is an important aspect of a discussion like this, and it's a reality in the world in which we live. There are people who seek to take advantage of people who are given a terminal diagnosis. And here I'm talking about scams that take place. It's one of the things that I know you talk about with your work, avoiding scams. What kind of advice can you give in there and share?
It's very easy to fall prey to a scam when you have a cancer diagnosis because it's terrifying and you want to try anything you can to feel better. And there's a lot of places that offer cures for cancer. If there really was a cancer cure, I think everybody would know about it by now. I believe that there are ways to get into remission. One way to figure out if something is a scam is if you go to the website and they have lots of testimonials, but they don't tell you what the product is, that's a good clue. Or if they have endless testimonials but no scientific backing, that's a pretty good clue. Another thing that can be done is you can type in the product or the idea and then the word scam and then see what shows up on your feed. I did that with one particular product because I couldn't find good information about it. And I put in the name of the product and then the word scam. And the company had put all these things on the internet that said it was not a scam, but they put the word scam in there and said, it's not a scam, it really works. Well, I had to go through 10 pages of results before I found a chemist website that talked about water products that were not as effective as people claimed they were. And that, I list that website in my book. That was very helpful for me to figure out that particular product. I don't name the product in the book. Another thing is, I talk about a couple of other scams where I explain how the scam works on a physical level and to say that it does not do what the product claims it does, whatever the salespeople might believe. Here's chemically what is going on. Another thing is people are told to alkalize their bodies. If you walk around the streets of New York, you'll probably find lots of signs saying, you know, you need to alkalize your body. Anything you put into your stomach is going to be neutralized by your stomach. Maybe cancer can live in an alkaline environment in a petri dish, but we're not petri dishes. We're human beings, and we have complex biological systems. So if you put alkaline water in your stomach, your stomach's going to neutralize, your body's going to neutralize it because it has to.
Mm-hmm.
If you focus on a whole foods, organic, plant-based diet, if that's the best diet, you know, a dietitian can help with that, then your body will naturally have the pH that it needs, and you'll get the color back in your skin, and you'll be able to have better blood draws when they check you for your blood. So if you, Survivor Soup has lots of ways of identifying what works and what doesn't. And it's all based on research I did in multiple books, and the resources and the citations are in the back of the book.
The book again is entitled Thriver Soup, A Feast for Living Consciously During the Cancer Journey. We've had some things shared with us from Heidi Bright's journey. She's the author of the book. Heidi is mentioned a couple of different times. She is now in radical remission from highly aggressive end-stage cancer. She'd gotten a diagnosis back in 2009 of a very rare end-stage uterine sarcoma, and shared an awful lot with us on our program. Thriver Soup, that's all is one word, .com website that accompanies the book, and there's a lot of information that is shared there as well. You mentioned earlier in our discussion that you had 10 tips that you would share through that site?
Yes, the Yes, they're my top 10 tips for a cancer diagnosis, and it's on the right side of the page when you go to the website, thriversoup.com.
Heidi, thank you very much for joining us on our program. Certainly the best continued and good health to you, too.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I enjoyed being here.
Think you know T-Mobile's coverage? Think again, Cincinnati. We've doubled our 4G LTE coverage in the last year. Plus, with our new extended range LTE, your signal goes two times farther and is four times better in buildings than before. So you're covered from downtown to Dayton. Now nobody covers Cincinnati better. Nobody. So hurry to a T-Mobile store or call 1-800-T-MOBILE to switch today.
Capable device required. Coverage not available in some areas. See T-Mobile store for details.